Hey everyone, it's Fahan, and you're listening to the Nissan Best Tea Talk podcast. Hope everybody's feeling good, ready to start your Friday. Alhamdulillah, it's Jummah today. And we're here to recreate in podcast form what happened last year at my local mosque sister circle, where a few of us got together and I was able to run a session on all things halal and personal finance. Whether it had to do with budgeting, halal investing, pensions, we covered all of it. And at the end of the session, I asked my sisters to leave me with what further questions they had so that I could cover it with you in podcast form. So thanks so much for joining me, and let's get started. So thanks for joining for another episode of the Nissan Invest Tea Talk podcast. I'll read out the question that we have for this week. It says, ways to train ourselves to be more mindful about expenses and avoid spending for no reason. Latest phones, etc. And so yes, I have several thoughts I wanted to share, mainly around what it means to be good at spending. And then at the same time, mindfulness relating to any activity that we do has a lot to do with the habits that we have, how actively we think about what it is that we're doing and avoid kind of being on autopilot and feeling, you know, bad about it afterwards. To me, that is all with the view to ultimately feeling good when it comes to anything relating to our finances. And spending is a big part of that. When I think about the thought of, you know, no one is born being good with money, it's not just about being a good saver or a good investor. Spending is a big part of what we do with our money too. And so in this episode, I wanted to almost embrace that topic a bit further and go through the thought that I have, which is that all planning that we do relating to our money is effectively just delayed spending. And so for this episode, the question that we're basically asking is, how is it that we can get good at spending money? And so we'll go through it in three parts. I'll go into more detail about my thought of thinking about planning as effectively being delayed spending and how that can help us feel, you know, more positive about the side of spending, so that the feeling of, you know, spending mindlessly or for no reason is something that we don't do as often. And then in practical terms, what does that look like? What does it actually look like making sure that when it comes to our expenses, there are fewer surprises and we feel like we're more active and in control and knowing what's going on with our money? And then lastly, there are some of these things that have actually nothing to do with numbers at all. Mindfulness relating to our finances is something that we can practice even, you know, separate from spending, saving, investing, etc. And it's more about being more conscious of our financial thoughts, our emotions, and the way that we approach decision making relating to money. So for the first part, we'll start with the question, what do we mean by mindfulness relating to our finances? So when I looked at this episode, I really wanted it to be as practical as possible. And so I will whiz through this section to just act like we're almost introducing the topic and break down the question in more detail so that we can get into what are the things that we can do practically. What does it actually look like? And so for me, when it comes to mindfulness relating to our money, is effectively simply being the one that is in the driver's seat. And so that has to not only to do with the act of spending, saving, investing, earning, and giving. It's also about how we feel when we're doing all those things. Are they aligned to our values? Yeah, it's almost as if the way that we spend our money is done in such a way that you feel like it reflects you as a person. And ultimately, it's also something that you consider positively, that you feel good about. So if I go back to the question, the feeling of spending for no reason, I like to flip that on its head and almost think of it as all planning that we ever do is just delayed spending. So we might have a plan for something, but we might not know exactly when that will happen. But when it does happen, we are prepared for that eventuality. And the actual spending of the money is not something that came to us as a surprise. But we cannot necessarily know that is when I'm going to be buying my new phone, as the example. But we can always be prepared for that eventuality. And I'll go into that in more detail. But yeah, when we think about spending for no reason, maybe we want to get closer to almost feeling like anything that we're doing with our money today, whether we're saving it, investing it, etc., in some way, it's going to be spent. You know, we can't take it with us when we go. And so, you know, the act of spending itself is not entirely wasteful. That's the other side of it as well, too. How is it that we can feel like we never waste money, or even the act of wasting money? If that does happen, it can almost be inevitable, because people do make mistakes, or we cannot always foresee what we're going to be spending money on. And if something does catch us off guard, it is a learning opportunity. So that's kind of almost quite meta, but that's the way that I kind of want to think about it. It's almost like saying we want to feel like the wastefulness part is very, very small, but you know, you can't avoid all waste in a system. And so in the end, it does boil down to simply having a plan. And when I think about the plan, I thought about the quote that effectively says that if you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything. So if you have no any type of guardrail or any type of opinion about where is it that your money's supposed to go, that is when we get into spending money for no reason, because we didn't give it a reason. And the natural follow-on question to that is, well, there's a limit to how much we know about the future, and there's a limit to how much we know when we will be spending that money. But we can practically, through our budget and the way that we plan, create scenarios in our heads so that we know how is it that we expect ourselves to want to act, how is it that we planned ourselves to act in particular situations, so that there is, in our view, there's less waste when it comes to the way that we spend our money. And ultimately, inshallah, we're the ones that will feel good when it comes to spending, when we know that spending is, of course, a huge part of personal finance. And so yes, I have 4 tips here to share with you about ways that I practice planning delayed spending. So the first tip is how we can use the sinking fund to our advantage. Now, the sinking fund is the pot of money that we set aside every month to cover the side of lifestyle spending that doesn't necessarily come up every month, but it might come up several times a year. And spending that needs to be accounted for in a particular way, and it can't necessarily just come up from that particular month's budget. Because A, we might not know when that actually will happen, and B, it becomes difficult having to have every month's budget be so variable. The idea is to try to keep it as simple as possible, something that you double check maybe either when you have a big life event or twice a year, which is typically when I relook at my budget. And so working backwards, what is that number going to be? Now, if lifestyle spend is going to represent 30% of a balanced budget, I kind of try to make it so that 15% of it goes towards my sinking fund. That goes towards those kinds of purchases. Now, it might seem like it's quite a lot, because you're saying, okay, but 15% of it has to be allocated into a sinking fund. Does that mean that every month you're effectively taking out of your sinking fund? And the answer to that is yes. It does mean that if you regularly use your sinking fund, that just means you're regularly accessing that pot of money towards expenses that you've planned for. Now, what does expenses look like? We mentioned here new phones, etc. You almost have to ask yourself, how much is it that you value having a new phone? And what is your view personally about how often you want to replace your phone? And my view is every 5 years. the same with a laptop. And so part of my sinking fund goes towards tech. The answer might be, you know, well, fine, if you only buy a new phone every 5 years, do you feel like you're setting aside a certain amount of money every month towards that new phone? No. But I know that the phone and the technology falls under the same bucket as some other types of larger expenses. So another type of expenses could be a really good suitcase. How often are you going to buy a really good suitcase? You probably want to keep it for as long as possible. But if we start to add all of that up, it is unlikely that I will buy myself a new winter coat, a new phone, a new suitcase, a new laptop, go on however many holidays I want to take that year. You see, all of those expenses are unlikely to happen in a single year, because that, of course, will start to put pressure on anybody's budget. But having those thoughts in your mind of saying, this is when I feel like replacing my phones, this is when I feel like making these types of purchases. Another good example is the dentist and the haircut. These are things that you know are going to happen every year. You're going to have to go to the dentist twice a year, and you're going to have to get a haircut twice a year. And so that's what I tell myself. And part of my sinking fund goes towards paying for the dentist and paying for the haircuts. But the reality is that with the dentist, because when you leave the dentist's office, you can book your next appointment. I try to do that. But with haircuts, sometimes I like to plan my haircuts around an event or a trip or something like that. So I don't necessarily know when I will get it, but it kind of varies. But I know that when I do pay for it, it will have to come out of the sinking fund. It's not going to come out of that month's budget. The reason you're doing this isn't necessarily to help with those purchases. It is mainly to take the pressure off all the other things that you spend your money on. Because the other 15% of my lifestyle spend goes directly into my Monzo account, which I use for spending. I have two current accounts, one of which is the Monzo, in which I put in two standing orders a month. One is for general spending, and the other one is to cover my travel. So that lifestyle spend that just goes into my Monzo, I don't know what I will be spending it on at the start of the month. I don't know. But anything that I do spend it on, I don't ever try to think, okay, that was a waste of money, because that's what it's there for. It's there to spend on whatever that fits under that lifestyle spend. So if it does end up becoming, it's all spent on a series of coffees, what you want to be doing is kind of taking the pressure off. Not all money needs to be planned for. You could just leave one part of it to say it fits that particular purpose, which is the purpose of general lifestyle spend, either at restaurants or going to the cinema, for instance, or doing whatever it is that you want to do with that part of money. It could even include getting a piece of clothing that kind of fits within that budget for that month. And what that also helps you to do is that anything else that you spot that could be a bigger purchase, or it could be a one-off purchase, you will then know that you have a mechanism through which you can pay for that upfront and in full. A big part of the way that you'll end up wanting to structure your budget to try to keep it as simple as possible, the way that I think about it is try to get a handle on my essential spending and try to make sure that it is truly essential spending. And then for my lifestyle spend, I try to make as much use of my sinking fund as possible so that more things I can pay upfront and in full. That also means that your sinking fund could be used to pay upfront and in full for some subscriptions. So I try to keep my subscriptions as much as possible to annual subscriptions, and then it's something that you effectively work towards through your sinking fund, and you almost increase the tolerance through which you accept a monthly subscription. Ideally, you want to keep those as fewer as possible, because the whole idea is to try to keep the spending portion of it, where the 15% that just goes into my Monzo, as little as that to go towards monthly subscriptions, so that it really is truly for unplanned expenses. So the sinking fund is a big part of it. But moving on to other practical points that we can do to feel like we're better spenders is the idea of loving what we own, to really feel like we have ownership of the things that are in our possession. I tried to distill this into actual practical things. I thought of travel accessories, for example. I try to keep the same set of bags, whether it's a travel bag or it's a suitcase. I like having them all matching, and that way I feel like, okay, those are the things I use when I go traveling. They are fit for purpose. They're useful. I like them. I'm always going to keep them. I want to take care of them. I only take them out when I need to travel. And if I do need to travel, I don't ever have to think about perhaps my bag's not fitting me. I try to think of other examples. So towels was an example. I also thought of pajamas. Those are also another thing that we could have as matching sets. But effectively, to feel like the things that we might use every day are actually our favorite things, and we want to have good ownership of them and take good care of them. The third part is related to that, and it's almost feeling like the spending part of it is not the end of the transaction. So I called number three effectively extending the buying cycle, but this effectively calls for having a system in place of disposing things. So do you know where your nearest charity shop is where you can drop off clothes? Do you have an eBay account? And is it easy for you to list items on eBay? Do you know where to drop those off? Equally, do you know where your nearest recycling center is if you have to dispose of things that are a bit trickier to dispose of? Ideally, we want to feel like there is almost a circular economy going on in the things that are inside our house. And this will help us feel better about bringing new stuff in, knowing that there's a way for other stuff to go out. And the last tip I have here, I called it leaning into the seasons. So that's effectively trying to avoid your year almost becoming a blur. A big part of having a sinking fund is realizing that every season might have different types of spending. So yeah, I try to come up with small rules for myself about how is it that I'll spend money in the summer compared to how I spend during the winter. So for instance, in the summer, I do enjoy doing more days out. So times when you buy a ticket to an event, so if it's like a sports match or it's a trip to a museum, you can even have a picnic outside of the museum. You can like make a whole day of it, which can be quite fun and different to the way that you might do during the winter, and feeling like, okay, I might have to spend more upfront for this trip compared to going to dinner three times in a single month in the month of December, which tends to happen sometimes even without planning. So it's just something useful that I try to keep in mind. But I realize that in listing all of these things, it might seem like I'm giving myself a lot of limits, or it might seem like it's quite rigid, but the way I view it is that by giving myself these types of limits, you're also giving yourself the freedom. Because I know how I would like to spend my sinking fund, because I pay attention to what does and doesn't fall into essential spending, I can truly keep the part of allowance that I give myself every month to truly be used for anything and anything. So because everything else has a structure, these rules effectively serve as a perimeter of freedom, if I could call it that, around my life, so that I avoid having every decision related to self-control, because ultimately that's really the hardest battle of all. Lastly, when we think about being more mindful with our money, and in general, how is it that we can train ourselves to do so? I do feel like tactics to improve your money mindfulness don't necessarily have to do with the numbers or the money, that throughout your life, training yourself to have improved skills in this area can help you be a better spender in the future. And to distill this, it's effectively about being present, being conscious of our financial thoughts, our emotions, and our decision making. And there are practical ways that we can do that. So I wanted to, for the rest of this episode, go through three tips that I wrote down about activities that we can do that have nothing to do with money that will help us become better spenders. And so the first one is to check our accounts at random, even at times when we don't necessarily have to do something relating to them, because that I think helps remove any type of emotion, but also removes any type of like burden. Every time I have to go to the app, I have to figure out what to do about this or that payment. It can just literally be something that you flash up and you see if it makes you feel any type of way, and then move on to the other apps. You know, the same way we pick up and we might go on social media, you might pick up, check your current account just to check it. Didn't have any reason to, in particular, to do that. But that's just almost like being exposed to it and getting to the point that looking at it doesn't actually mean anything. I do that just to be like, okay, I'll see if that makes me think of anything. And are those thoughts positive or are those thoughts negative? The second point, which I think can be really useful to increase mindfulness, is to have what's called no-spend days. It's even better if it's a weekend day where you are not spending on anything other than essentials. Now, what does that look like? Now, with the having a Monzo, which I use for all spending that's not essential spending, that just means to me not using my Monzo for that day. And why is no spend days useful? It can serve as a detox. What is the purpose of having these no spend days? They're effectively a good way to hit pause. You know, you're only spending on essential bills and groceries, and you're giving yourself the breathing room to not always feel like you're swiping. And it can help identify some blind spots, how you can incorporate more grocery spending, if there are things that technically you could have bought at the grocery store rather than getting it at the corner shop. Or similarly, it can just generally help you learn more about your spending habits. And the third is to try to envision your financial future, recognizing that it is something hard to do, as a way to train how far in advance we're capable of planning. Yes, because I do feel like every time you do need to have a plan, it's precisely the time when planning for that uncertain thing is quite hard to do. And that is precisely when we do need one. So if we might feel like actually planning even up until the end of the year is difficult, it's quite good to try to get yourself into the habit to try to put something down on paper, even if they are things that are quite loosely held. So I try to have as loosely held plans. Why? Because it's much easier to steer a boat that's already moving. Once you get started, once you start to put a mark on the chalkboard, as it were, you're able to then start to get your mind thinking about whether you agree with something, whether you don't agree with something, if that will serve your goal or what that won't serve your goal. And to end this episode, that is why having tawakkul is so important, because big part of that is not simply putting our trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's also about trying to do the best that we can with the information that we have in the present. And as a whole, that can help a lot with dealing with uncertainty. My hope is that this episode did throw up some fun, interesting challenges that we can do. And do let me know if that's the case. Thank you for joining me. This has been the Nisa Invest Tea Talk Podcast. I will see you next week. Bye for now.